Good afternoon. My name is Malcolm Debu, and the title of the talk which I'm going to deliver is called Zoroastrianism, the Religion of the Soldiers of Truth, but I've never been to war in the name of religion. I'll just initially give you some examples of history relation to how Zoroastrians and the importance it plays, the truth plays in for the life of a Zoroastrian. The first Indian or Asian known to have traveled to Britain was in 1723. He was a Zoroastrian by the name of Nauroji Rustam Manik Set. He came to Britain to seek justice from the directors of the East India Company, whose employees back in India had falsely imprisoned his family and money was owed to them. His case was accepted and the family duly repaid, with interest, incidentally. Nauroji Rustam Manik Set went back to India and informed his fellow countrymen that the British, one could have a dialogue with them, and they were interested in the truth. And if convinced, then things can work out in peace and harmony. This particular idea continued throughout the 19th century and early 20th century, which led directly to Indian independence. Now, Indian independence from the British was wholly a peaceful exercise. And this can be, the roots of this can be traced back to the first Indian or Asian, happened to be a Zoroastrian, coming here. Incidentally, the second and third Indians visiting to Britain, South Africa, also happened to be Zoroastrians, who were sent as representatives by fellow Indian princes to negotiate with the British because of the importance placed in Zoroastrianism on speaking truth. Nauroji's father, I'll give you a second example, the famous Rustam Manik Set of Surat in western India. 2 decades earlier, in 1701, he had played a vital part in obtaining the rights from the Mughal Emperor Aurangzeb for the English East India Company to set up a base in Surat, which was the busiest port then in Western India, prior to Bombay, because Bombay at that time did not exist. Rustam Manik was known for his charitable projects, such as having wells dug for all communities. An inscription left behind on one of these wells, dug in 1699 in Surat, states, "I, Rustam Manik, a Parsi, dug this well in the way of God. Whoever drinks the water of this place, the righteous reward of that person may be received to this humble self." Incidentally, the term Parsi, it was a term given by the Hindus of India to the Zoroastrian religious refugees who fled Iran or Persia after the Arab conquest and settled in Western India in the 10th century. During the late 19th and early 20th centuries, the first three ethnic MPs to the House of Commons elected to the British Parliament were all Zoroastrians. A central theme during the term in Parliament, whether they were liberals, conservatives, or Labour communists, was to protest against the British of the treatment of the Indians back in India. And again, the whole thing, the emphasis was based on the telling of the truth. Because the believed truth, by having it solved, would lead to peace. They also were able to persuade the Shahs of Iran to stop the religious persecution of the Zoroastrians, which had lasted over 1,000 years. Again, by sheer dialogue. Incidentally, yesterday, this is my first visit to Scotland, by the way. And I just happened to yesterday be going up the castle, and it was pretty dark and the light was fading, and I happened to notice the statue of Field Marshal Haig, Earl of Haig. Now, of course, those amongst you studying the First World War, he was mainly responsible for very blunderous campaigns and led to a lot of he being responsible for a lot of people dying. Now, if you look at the whole life of Earl Haig, he also was responsible for setting up the Red Cross, and he did a lot of work on charity and things like that. And if you look at that particular, the plaque underneath, it says the statue was paid by a man called Dhanjibhai Bhambanji from Bombay, who also happens to be a Zoroastrian. Now, the reason was this, again, because we're looking at the person's life as a whole, and not only judging the person by one instance. Yes, because if you look at Zoroastrian worldview, what really takes you across into heaven or hell is actually a cumulative goodness and wickedness. It's not only one act. So it's not a coincidence that Dhanjibhai Bhambanji, who actually paid for that statue, because by that time Earl Haig was got a rather bad press by many of the historians of the time. Moving on. The three Magi, popularly known as the three wise kings from the east, was the Zoroastrian priest who brought gifts for the infant Jesus. Using their good mind, they decided to take a different route back home, thus avoiding meeting King Herod again and informing him about Jesus' whereabouts. Here, for instance, if they'd gone the same route, they had to tell, but because they believed in the truth, they had to tell Herod where Jesus was. But by taking a different route, they avoided the whole meeting in the first place. And you can see the rest is history, because Christianity is today one of the world's major faiths. The historian Herodotus of Asia Minor, who was ethnically an Ionian or a Greek, was incidentally an Iranian or a Persian subject. I don't know if many people realize this. In book 1 of his history, is written about 445 BC, he noted three things about the Persian boys, the way they were trained. And he said, they taught three things. One, to ride a horse. Two, to draw a bow. Three, to tell the truth and perform righteous acts. In Zoroastrianism, the truth teller and the person who performs righteous acts is called the Ashavan, the possessor of truth or the soldier of truth. The importance of telling truth continues even today, and it can be conveyed in the very first prayer that Zoroastrians are taught by the age of 2 or 3, called the Ashem Vahu prayer. It's an ancient Avestan, can be sort of dated easily about 2,000 years before the Christian era or the Common Era. And it goes as follows. Ashem Vahu Vahishtem Asti Ushta Asti Ushta Ammai Yehat Ashahi Vahishtai Ashem. This is the first prayer Zoroastrians have been taught down the ages, even during Herodotus' time or even before. And all it simply means is this: truth or righteousness is the best good, and it is happiness. Happiness is to him who is righteous for the sake of best righteousness. Even at the height of the religious persecution of the Zoroastrians of Iran, one point the critics of the Zoroastrian religion would recognize that the Zoroastrians were trustworthy because they always told the truth. And there was a saying in Iran in the late 18th, 19th century for the Karavanai side, that it is to ensure that they will not be sort of have a safe passage, it's worthwhile, for instance, staying next to a Zoroastrian habitation. It's not a coincidence that the first bank which was opened in Iran happened to be owned by a Zoroastrian. Although nationalized later, it still operates today under the name of Bank-e Milli, or the People's Bank. Darius the Great, who lived between 522 and 486 before the Common Era, ruled the Iranian Empire, stretching from the borders of China in the east to Libya and Egypt and the Danube in the west, from Central Asia in the north to the Indus and Yemen in the south, stated in one of his famous rock reliefs. By the favor of the creator Ahura Mazda, I am a friend to the right. I am not a friend to the wrong. It is not my desire that the weak man should have wrong done to him by the mighty, nor it is my desire that the mighty man should have wrong done to him by the weak. What is right, that is my desire. I am not a friend of the wicked man. This particular passage is very important because of the amount of vast territory the Iranians were governing. And the Iranian judges, or the governors, the satraps, or the provinces, had to govern. So to ensure peace in the empire, all parties had to be satisfied, and thereby ensuring that no wrong was given either to a weak person or a mighty person. Because often in history you see that even the weak can commit quite a few acts of barbarity against the strong. Although Darius is known in the West for his Battle of Marathon, but from a Zoroastrian viewpoint, he was a model ruler. It is he who ensured that the Jewish prophet of the Old Testament, Ezra, could return back to Jerusalem together with the Jews, which his predecessor, the Zoroastrian king Cyrus, had agreed in 539 BC when he liberated them from Babylon, because breaking one's word hinders peace. Darius's predecessor Cyrus had committed that the Jews can return back to Jerusalem. This is in the prophet Ezra, the whole story which I'm outlining here. Now, because it was Cyrus who had given his word, it was up to one of his descendants to ensure that word was committed and continued. It is also Darius who gave money from the Iranian treasury to rebuild the Temple of Solomon, which was subsequently destroyed by the Romans. Hence, if those amongst you who have visited the Wailing Wall will notice the typical Iranian architecture of the time, of the big boulders, which is very common on Iran at the time. Now, many people have tried to work out how these big boulders were transported, but it was a part of Iranian engineering of the time. And you can see similar structures in the tomb of King Cyrus in central, in Papagarde in western Iran, southwestern Iran. Darius's son, King Xerxes, also known in the West for the Battle of Salamis, is also the same Xerxes in the story of Esther in the Old Testament, who ensured that the Jews were not massacred by one of his Iranian ministers, because like his father, Xerxes was taught from an early age that the difference between right and wrong. By performing the right, ensures peace. By doing the wrong, it ensures destruction. King Darius was the father of the Iranian nation-state, known as anointed in the Old Testament Isaiah 2. Is known to have given the world the first declaration of human rights in the ancient world. It ensured religious and cultural freedom amongst the various nations that made up the Iranian Empire and was the world's first global empire in the ancient world. Not only this allowed the monotheistic Jews to practice their freedom of worship as mentioned in the Old Testament, but also ensured the polytheistic Babylonians and other faith communities to continue the mode of worship, as demonstrated by the Cyrus inscription in cuneiform, which is found at the British Museum in a small clay cylinder. The Persian kings, from Cyrus downwards, ensured that the Zoroastrians would not proselytize or convert the Jews or any others to Zoroastrianism. Why? Because in Zoroastrianism, it is not your religion that'll take you to paradise, but it's your truth and righteous deeds. Also, all religions come from the Creator. Therefore, religious conversion was seen by Zoroastrians against the wishes of the Creator. Zoroastrianism is not an Abrahamic religion. It is in fact an Indo-Iranian revealed religion. And it is one of the world's oldest living faiths. Although it has influenced Judaism, Christianity, and to a degree Islam, it does not originate from the Middle East. Zoroastrianism is one of Iran's greatest contributions to the history of human thought. The prophet Zarathustra, who lived in eastern Iran around 1500 BC, which today is on the borders of Iran, Afghanistan, and Tajikistan, stated in his poetic hymns called the Gathas, which were composed orally, that the best truth, not only the truth, but the best truth, Asha, which is distilled and discerned with the good mind, Vahumana, will bring everlasting peace and perfection. The lie and wickedness stems from the evil mind, will only bring about carnage, destruction, and death, which does not stem from the Creator, Ahura Mazda. According to Prophet Zarathustra's revelation, since Ahura Mazda is wholly perfect, is wholly good, therefore perfect, hence immortal, thus evil cannot arise from Ahura Mazda. Humankind, Ahura Mazda's finest creation, who is born perfect because the Creator is perfect, therefore by performing evil acts does not assist the Creator. And it is only through humans performing goodness, or specifically good deeds, the Creator will be victorious. So in Zoroastrianism, the Creator and the creation are interdependent, which is not quite in the case in Abrahamic religions. In the Zoroastrian worldview, the omniscient and the all-knowing Ahura Mazda created the world to entice evil from the dark abyss and entrap it. Thus, the battleground between good and evil is the physical creation created by Ahura Mazda. And for the purpose of to assist the Creator in defeating evil, Ahura Mazda created the physical creation, namely the sky, followed by the waters, followed by the earth, the plants, animals, humans, and lastly fire, to assist the Creator in defeating evil. It is only through good thoughts, good words, and good deeds, which commence from the first human being, Geomalkan, who is known as Keomaz in the Iranian epic Shahnameh of Firdoshi, that evil will be defeated. During the battle, all creation will suffer death at the hands of evil. But Ahura Mazda outwitted evil by giving all creation an immortal soul. At the end of time, evil is totally annihilated because the Asher ones, or the truth teller, by the cumulative good deeds and righteous deeds have overwhelmed evil. And the immortal souls, starting with the first human being, Geomad, including the prophet Zarathustra, and the last human being, the Saushant or the Savior, will be resurrected with their physical body and will enter paradise after the final judgment, hence ensuring eternal peace. What I've given you, for instance, is basically, in the short time, an overall view of the belief of what Zoroastrianism is in the issue of peace. But it is peace, in our case, is allied with the truth. It stems from the truth. Without the truth, you cannot obtain peace. This is the fundamental message I would like people to, at least one thing you can get is this, the message I would like to, from a Zoroastrian perspective. The way the Zoroastrian worldview is this, that all of us are meant to be ethical, and the ethical structure in all of us consists of the holy or the bounty of spirit, called Spenta Menu in Old Avestan, which is in the prophet's teachings, the Gathas. Followed Spenta Menu comes Vahumana, the good mind. From the good mind, by having the good mind, you can differentiate between the truth and the lie. The truth, or the best truth, is called Asha Vahishta, which is the best order, truth and righteousness. This leads on to Kshatra Vairya, which is the desirable or the sovereign kingdom. By having a desirable kingdom, it leads to Spenta Armaiti, which is bounty of devotion, peace and piety. Without having, in the state of war, it is difficult to devote oneself. And if you look at history, it is during the time of peace you have, you know, things like hospitals built, things like waterworks built, you know, which really ensure that humanity can continue and progress. By having these first five things in place, it leads on to perfection, Hurvatad. And once things are perfected, it leads to immortality, because your deeds are remembered for immortal. And I give examples of, okay, this is the Russian example I gave of people, but I'm sure in history will teach, history is full of examples of people who have done good deeds, and that's why they're immortalized. And this seventh path of the, what we call the ethical human being, it is in many sense, it's a definition of Ahura Mazda itself. Ahura Mazda, being the creator, is omnipresent and is everywhere. And it is to describe Ahura Mazda in just one word is very difficult. So there are various descriptions, and collectively if all this forms the creator. It's a force in Zoroastrianism. And this, in a sense, because we are created by the creator, we have this within us. To be able to be an Ashavan and able to fight the fight evil and perform goodness. Just to summarize, I would like to say that in Zoroastrianism, an absolute distinction is maintained between the origin of good and origin of evil. To the Zoroastrian, Ahura Mazda is wholly good. It is Ahura Mazda who has created the heavens and the world and mankind, or humankind. The source of pure piety, peace, harmony and joy stems from Ahura Mazda. Evil is also a reality, a wholly negative force seeking to destroy, corrupt and defile. Death, disease, misery and sin are all work of evil. This is the cosmic struggle. And the cosmic struggle is, by annihilating evil, you'll have peace. Now yes, we have been speaking, the previous speakers have been localizing their speeches on the Middle East. But I'm giving you very much a whole perception of how this thing is. The Zoroastrians believe that the role in this cosmic struggle is to assist the Creator in bringing about the final annihilation. To give you a classic story about, you all know the story of Noah. The Noah story is basically that Yahweh is angry because of the sin and the wickedness of mankind, and thereby brings about the flood. In Zoroastrianism, there's a similar story, the story of Yima or Jamshid. But unlike the Noah story, here, Ahura Mazda informs Yima that evil forces are going to destroy the creation. And the way you outwit it is by making an underground cave, and you have a 2x2 creation. Except in the case of Noah, you have the floods, because the Zoroastrians are much more the northern climes, which is the Iranian climes, we had the Ice Age. But the story is very similar. In many ways, for instance, but the story has start, the roots of the story are slightly different because how the Zoroastrian perceives the creator and why the world was created. The Zoroastrians believe that the eventual and eternal triumph of the forces of good through the ethical power of the truth-conceived thought, the truth-spoken word, and the well-done deed is inevitable. Because all creation has got the concept of performing goodness. Even the most wicked person you can think in history has performed even one good deed. This one good deed adds to the cumulative good deeds performed by all. And this brings about the victory and subsequent peace. By following the path of righteousness and exercising choices given to us to do good and spread happiness, Zoroastrians live their lives as the soldiers or Ashravans of Auramazda. To the Zoroastrian, the last creation fire is the living emblem of the creator Auramazda. Without fire, one would not be dynamic. We would be stone cold or dead. It gives us the force to move and to do good things. Every Zoroastrian seeks to unite the fire within him to the flame of divine righteousness. And what we are initiated is we all of us at a very young age wear this, what we call the sudra. It is called the garment of the good mind. And earlier the first speaker was talking about reaching to the creation in the past, in the future coming behind you. This particular pocket, it's got a small pocket in the front. At the back of it is called the potential storage of good deeds. At the back is a larger, so you can see, which is the potential one can do for good deeds. So how much good deeds one has done throughout his life relatively is still small to what one can do. And of course the wearer is in the present. And we are supposed to wear this throughout our lives. Of course we've got sort of like a vest. We've got several of them. One has to wear it constantly. And we have also a sacred girdle to, you know, it is like seen as a spiritual armor against evil. And every time we pray, Zoroastrians recite the prayers 5 times a day. Which reminds us of what I've just said just now. Thank you. Now, just relating to the prayer, the idea of peace, I've chosen an ancient Avestan prayer, which is part of a longer ritual, which blesses houses or when you buy a new house or when you new congregation. And I'll give you the English translation of this. It goes, may these virtues mentioned, which are the satisfaction to the righteous people, their blessings, guileless nature and thanksgiving come into this house. Now for this gathering, may there arise righteousness, sovereignty, prosperity, glory, everlasting peace and happiness. May there be a long enduring predominance of the religion of the creator Auramazda, revealed by Zarathustra. You have to bear in mind this is very much in the Zoroastrian ritual context, but the idea can be extended to all creation and all religions. Now from this gathering, may there arise all this righteousness, power of holy men, and the law of Auramazda. May the good, heroic, and the beneficent guardian spirits of humankind, of the righteous people, bring with them the means of holiness as wide as the earth, as extensive as the oceans, as exalted as the sun, come in this board. May the guardian spirits fulfill desires of better men for withstanding wicked men and for the greater increase of wealth and fame. May in this world obedience triumph over disobedience. May peace triumph over discord. May charity triumph over stinginess. May devotion triumph over contempt. May truth triumph over falsehood. May the moral order triumph over chaos. May so that in this board, through the holy Yasacha or prayer Srausha and the bounteous immortals of the Creator, desire eagerly or expect eagerly good yashnas and invocations, and good yajnas and invocations, good gift, health-giving gift, and friendly offering. May this gathering protect itself for a long time. And all the Varasin prayers finish with the Ashem Vahu prayer, which I just said about righteousness. And I'll end with the Ashem Vahu prayer. Ashem Vahu Vahishtem Asti Ushta Yad Ashai Vahishtai Ashem. Shnaukra Aura Mazda. May the glory of Aura Mazda be with all of us. Thank you. There are some, Neil asked me to bring some leaflets and information about Zoroastrianism, so if anybody is interested, it's in that other hall. You're more than welcome to help yourself.